A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Chris Evans here. A big thank you for downloading our Virgin Radio podcast. Coming up on this week's edition of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky, Alice Eve chats ITV's new historical drama, Belgravia. Daisy Haggard tells us about Sky One's new parenting sitcom, Breeders. Claire Nelson tells us about her experience of a death-defying 20-foot fall in her amazing book, What I Learned from Falling. David Baddiel chats about touring the UK in his Trolls, Not the Dolls show. And Alison McGowan shares all ahead of his show, The Piano Show, at the Old Vic Theatre on June the 1st. Plus, stars of Sky One's Bulletproof, Noel Clarke and Ashley Walters. All that and so much more coming up.
When the genius behind Downton Abbey writes a script about high society in 19th century London, you know you're in for a scandalous treat. Belgravia starts this Sunday at 9 p.m. on ITV, and here with salacious stories of dishonour and deceit is the honourable and not deceitful at all, Alice Eve.
Good morning, Alice Eve.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, how are you?
Very well, thank you for having me.
Okay, it's ITV, it's 9 p.m. It starts episode one this Sunday, March 15. Julian Fellowes' creation. Tell us about the fellow members of your cast. Tell us what they get up to, what's just happened, the fast forward, the 26 years, 23 years fast forward within the first episode. Tell us all about everything we need to know. Whet our appetite.
OK, sure, here we go. So Belgravia is set in Victoria's time, so the 1840s, and that was a big time of growth and expansion, and they were building a lot and industrialisation, not dissimilar to what we've just seen with the internet and everything that's grown. And it does start in 1815, but the bulk of it, and certainly my character, is part of the 1840s storyline. And that storyline really is about the birth of a new class that disrupts the aristocracy. And, you know, Belgravia was a marshland. Your old home was a marshland. And then Queen Victoria decided she wanted to live in Buckingham House full-time before it was Buckingham Palace. And all the aristocrats flocked and said, well, Thomas Cubitt came down and he drained it and, you know, made it solid and built it sort of in a grid system in a nice fashion, sort of American way, really. And these big grand houses came up and then everybody flocked to them and we all had our nice dresses made and lived in them and wanted to go to the parties.
Excellent. So that's a perfect, beautiful description of the floating foundations that is still Belgravia, yeah, and its surrounding areas. But there's just been a battle.
There's just been a battle. In 1815, the Battle of Waterloo.
Because that's a gorgeous scene set, right? But now the drama. Okay. Here we come with the thrust of what's going on.
Yeah, so it's 1815 and I'm going to go off on another tangent.
I love it.
Sorry.
As long as you allow me to bring you back, feel free.
Keep me on course. In 1815, you know, they go to war. Battle was a sort of little bit more organised than it is now. So they went after a party. They just went off to war after this dinner. And obviously it was one battle. It wasn't a war. So they had the battle and they came back. And then we cut to 1840, where the fallout from what happened has been made clear, because there was a marriage at the night of the party and someone was given a husband and the husband was of an aristocratic class and she wasn't of that class. So there's a sort of scandal that unfolds in there. And then there's the story of their story unfolds. And then over the course of that, you know, they have another son, Oliver Trenchard, who's married to me, who's Susan Trenchard. And Susan Trenchard and Oliver haven't produced their own child. So there's a lot of sort of scandal and procreation questions going, a little bit more than Downton, which was kind of smoother and less.
It's like Downton's punk cousin.
That's right,
isn't it? So your character, she's a strong woman and a woman not to be messed with.
Yes, you know, she's a modern woman. I mean, Julie,
a modern woman. That's
yeah, that's sort of because there are many ways to describe women, and we're really trying to change the language around that. But I'd say Julian's a real feminist, and he's written these completely comprehensive women, and you know, when you get your hands on his script and you realise that everything is taken care of, everything you'd hope that she'd be defended and her story would be told, and those things are there. But Susan is navigating some real judgments and some real situations, and she navigates them to the point where some people could criticise her, but I champion it, and I think she's determined, and she's, you know, able to do things that we now take for granted, and she does things that are maybe a bit naughty.
A trailblazer.
She is.
Okay, a groundbreaker. So when there's so much revelry on set and it's so gregarious. It's so, you know, garrulous.
Yeah.
Gregarious and garrulous and all that kind of stuff. And it's mayhemic, you know. But that's your job, right? Now, that would put me in a mood, in
yes.
the kind of mood where I just want to go out. So how do you... Is that what you do after... Because you got Glenister on set, for heaven's sake.
He's a lot of fun.
Now, he likes the odd glass of pop, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
And Greg isn't no shrinking... She's no shrinking violet.
No.
So please tell me there was some fun had...
Yes, we went to we went to a sort of hotel on the borders where it was a golf course we were on in Scotland, and there was a bar there, and there was a little bit of fun at the end of the days there. But on the whole, when you're up at five and you've got, you know,
on the whole,
you have to just take magnesium and pray.
Right, we've got to plug it again because she's given us so much of her time here. Belgravia starts Sunday, March 15, 9 p.m. ITV. It's the brand new Julian Fellowes, big period drama. Starts 1815, gets to about 1840. What a time 1840 was! You had Disraeli, you had Darwin, you had Dickens. You know, you had the big triumvirate. I mean, you know, those cats were they were something else, weren't they?
The big D's.
Oh my God! Yeah, I mean. You know, those three hanging around town.
And the big V, Victoria.
Big V, Victoria. She's in the main chair.
Yeah, she was
going down, all going on.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, that's great to see. Anything else you'd like to say before we wish you farewell and good luck?
Good luck, farewell. And, you know, may we continue to be strong. Keep calm and carry on.
Keep calm and carry on. Or, as we did last night, keep calm and curry on.
Yeah.
Nothing like a Thursday curry.
I was just in India, and I tell you what, the food there is blows your mind.
It is, isn't it?
Thank you for having me.
Okay, give my love to your dad. Don't know your mum, but give my love to your dad.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Having children is a gift. A gift that will turn you grey and make you say awful, unrepeatable things. The fantastic Sky Original Breeders starts tonight at 10 p.m. on Sky One, and here to hold our hands through the minefield that is parenting is its wonderful star, Daisy Haggard.
Yeah, good morning, Daisy.
Morning.
So well done, congratulations.
Thank you.
We love the programme.
Oh, good.
We think it's awesome. We've been banging on about it for the last 4 days. Just give us your praisey of what it's about, who's in it, and what kind of situations you sort of allow us to indulge in.
I would say that Breeders is a relentlessly unflinching look at parenthood.
Nicely put.
The opposite of the Instagram parent generation show. It should make you feel either smug that you haven't behaved as badly as we do in it, or, you know, like there's somebody as bad as you parenting. And I think it's, it stars Martin Freeman and myself. And I think it's a refreshing look at parenthood.
It's the thinking, it's the school of thinking out loud, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And what Simon Blackwell says about it, which I really love, is that at the end of every episode, nobody has learned anything.
Well, I don't know about that. Not in the show.
In the show. We don't sort of grow. We keep making the same mistakes.
Okay, because there's that other great Sky show called The Affair, which is a show of two halves. And in it, what you do is you get... There's a couple having an affair, and the first half of the show is the bloke's take on what happened. And then the second half of the show, you rewind to the back of the beginning of the script for that particular episode, and then it's the girl's take on it, and it's completely different. It's not dissimilar when watching your show with my wife.
With
I don't know about your wife, but I saw your husband,
she
Rachel.
Oh, no,
well, because we've watched the first three episodes and I wanted to watch more, and Alex wouldn't let me watch it without him because he's loving it.
See, no, I love it too, but I sort of want to watch the next ones. Oh, I've said it out loud on the radio, haven't I? I've done that thing. Because it's the comedy of no filter, isn't it? That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the other thing is that it is about a family that really love each other. It's about a relationship that's functioning and actually quite happy. It's just quite real and unfiltered.
It's very real and extraordinary. No, it's completely... Yeah. That's why. Because if you're going to make a comedy like this, if you hold back even a bit, it's not going to work.
Yeah, no.
And you go the whole hog, the whole way.
Yeah.
Now, the couple in the main couple in the show, played by yourself and Martin, they have two children. You were having your second child, or you'd had your second child when you auditioned for this?
I had literally just had my second child. Right. She was in a car seat on the floor next to me, and everyone said, "Oh no, do this audition." I was like, "I can't. I mean, I literally can't." My husband held up some lines and his iPhone, and I very angrily read them.
Perfect.
Whilst my 4-year-old was watching The Night Garden, which I could hear was about to finish, and I was just like, bah, 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 and just did it really fast.
Oh my goodness me! And so it was that wasn't method acting. Whatever the opposite of method acting was,
it was just living.
He was living.
Just, so
you,
it was.
You took your situation in with to you for the audition, which is what the audition situation required.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it was one of those things where I thought, well, I'll never hear anything because I that was awful. But weirdly, got a recall and then had to go in. With my like breast pump in my bag to do the actual recall.
See, I bet they thought she's hired a baby. She's never been pregnant in her life.
I know.
How much does this woman want this job? Let's give it to her. Jesus. What the heck?
Yeah.
So how many eps is this all in all? Is it 8 or 10?
10.
Ten.
Yeah.
And we've got all 10 to watch, haven't we? We're lucky.
Yeah.
How many are you in?
Have you got them all?
Well, I've watched 3 because I wanted to watch more, and Alex won't let me watch it without him.
Sorry.
So I've had to wait.
I watched 1, and then I watched some of 7. And then I thought, oh no, okay, I need to go back and
because they stand alone, their own, they're fine, but there is a continuing arc with all the different developments of people getting older and people having to move flats, this and the other. I love the fact that Martin's mum and dad are addicted to the Shopping Channel and have bought things late night, right, with a sort of bit of wineology in them, late night. So on the Shopping Channel, you can buy things to adapt things you already have to make them better. And what they've done is they bought loads of things to adapt things that you may already have to make them better, but they didn't have the things originally. So they only bought the adapters, and they're now having to clear out that whole house, aren't they?
Yes, totally.
What else are you up to?
I am currently writing series 2 of a show that I wrote called Back to Life.
Which is brilliant.
No, oh, thank you.
Hang on a minute. It's not brilliant. It's off the charts, isn't it? We
really
talked about
good.
This yesterday, didn't
oh,
we?
Good.
Come on, pile in with it.
Well, no, I love that because it was the show about you and you've just come back to your life having
I don't want
to say too much, but
no, having left prison. Yeah. I mean, you're allowed to say that. Well,
okay.
Yeah. I should never have written a show with any spoilers because I'm so guilty.
And it's all about how you try and re-engage. It was beautiful.
Oh,
it was funny.
You.
It made me cry. I loved it.
Oh,
so
thank
good.
You. That's still on iPlayer, I think, as well. So
Ozzy Jane has just been binging on it.
Really?
We couldn't shut them up yesterday. It's like, stop talking about Back to Life. She's going to talk about something else.
No, we can talk about everything.
Right. In that case,
so I'm writing that at the moment.
Let's talk about you as the head of comedy. The unsmiling, unspeaking head of comedy.
Okay.
Tell people about that show. What
really
show was
funny.
It? Come on, tell us about that.
I played Myra in episodes, which was the Matt LeBlanc show written by David Crane and Jeffrey Clarick. And basically, I was the head of comedy who didn't have a single clue about what comedy was.
Or a sense of humour.
Or a sense of humour remotely. And I just
based
made strange
based on nobody
sounds.
We've ever met.
Based on nobody in comedy. And basically I just made really weird noises.
Yeah.
A lot.
based on nobody we've ever met.
No.
Okay, if I write a name down and make sure the cameras don't see it. Okay. This is based on nobody we've ever met. That one?
Oh, I don't. I have not met that one.
No, she doesn't exist.
I've not
that's
met
why.
That one.
That's why, because it's a name I just made up and I'm now ripping up. And
I'm sure
in
it's
the
based
bin.
On everybody, everyone's ever met.
Nice save.
Yeah.
Daisy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for not shaking our hands. Oh, thanks for not hugging
can
us.
Can we all cuddle now?
But please come again back soon
when
we can do all that stuff again.
Brilliant.
All right. Because you can't even blow kisses. You don't even be blowing kisses,
no.
Do you?
Just wave.
You can suck back the air.
Yeah. suck us
no,
a kiss.
No, don't even do that.
No, you can't
wave.
Do anything. Oh, no, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, the fudge, for coming in. Okay. And we'll see you later.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Cauliflower off.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Right, come on, let's introduce our guest now, who's hanging on very politely. Thank
From you. The sweaty indie rock scene in Leeds to the shiny glamour of Hollywood, our next guest has been on quite a journey. His brilliant new film, Radioactive, charting Marie Curie's life and enduring legacy, is in cinemas later this month. And here to tell us all about it is Yorkshire's finest, the superb Sam Riley.
Morning, Sam.
Thanks for that intro. Lovely.
I thought we'd interviewed before, but we haven't. You assured me we haven't done this
Never,
before.
No.
Okay, all right. I think I said to somebody else, can't wait to see Sam again. Right. So you and Rosamund Pike, you are Madame Curie. Tell us about the wonder of her, the wonder of him, how they met and what they got up to together.
Well, I knew very little about them, to be honest. I mean, I'd heard of Marie Curie in the same way I'd heard of Florence Nightingale, but I didn't really know exactly what they
same
got up
here,
to. But they were both incredible scientists, Together, they discovered two new elements on the periodic
not
table.
Not just one,
not
two.
Not two, radium and polonium. Yeah. Polonium because she was Polish, actually, originally. That's why they called it that. And she won two Nobel Prizes, one for physics, one for chemistry. No one else has ever done that before. And their daughter also won a Nobel Prize with her husband because they took the radioactivity that she named Marie Curie and helped develop what we now use to fight cancer, the sort of synthetic radium.
Okay, no, so there you go. That's the lovely sort of narrative main arch of the story. But to say she was single-minded and reluctant to get involved with any other human being on the planet is understating it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's... Yes, she was an awkward person to work with. I mean, she had very difficult...
And be married to.
And, yeah, well... You know, he loved it, I think.
Yeah, no, vice versa. He was a
He understood it, you know, and he admired her brilliance. He wasn't threatened by her genius, you know, and that's what makes them such a fascinating couple. When they first won, when she was nominated for the prize, they only wanted to give it to him, and he refused it unless she was also recognised. So he was a very...
But then she couldn't go.
I mean, they didn't really... They were fascinating people. They could have patented radium, but they wanted everyone to be able to use it, you know. So, I mean, they actually had very little money. She died almost in poverty. And it was incredibly hard physical work. They had to sort of break down this ore to get a tiny speck of things, you know. There's so many things I had no idea.
And they did it by
about.
Hand because I was going to, that's what the next thing I was going to go on to. So they got they ordered all this ore, and she was there in the backyard
crushing it in a bathtub.
Yeah, and tons and tons, 400 tons of something.
Yeah, and tons of water and everything, and yeah, they worked in very basic conditions, but came up but discovered these two new elements, and they were a wonderful couple. You know, they're incredibly. Equal and well, you wouldn't say modern because there are still some guys.
But they're so driven, though, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were so driven. And they could only have ever met or fallen in love over science. She would not have been with anybody else other than had it been for the common bond of science.
Yeah, I think so.
Right, so they get together. They discover not one but two brand new elements. But they don't realise themselves, as clever as they are, how dangerous radium is.
Well, I think when he was accepting the award on behalf of the two of them at the Nobel Prize, yeah. He did sort of... There were anxieties, but he said... Because Nobel had discovered dynamite, which is something else
I didn't
realise. And it was the same thing. You know, there were a lot of amazing discoveries came from dynamite, but then, you know, the horrors...
In
the wrong hands. And they disbelieved that, you know, if you're unlocking the secrets of nature, it's sort of up to human beings how we behave with the things that we find.
So we have Marie Curie. She wins two, not one. You know, women just weren't on the radar of the Nobel Prize panel, were they? You know,
no,
especially scientists.
I'm sure some would argue they might still not be exactly.
No, but even less so then.
Yeah,
almost
absolutely.
Invisible.
Yeah, oh, totally.
So she wins one and then she goes and wins. How very dare she win another one?
I know, there's a wonderful picture of her with all of the great scientists of the time. And she never sits still for a photo. She's always, on the photo that everyone's sitting looking very proper and she's talking to the person next to her. It's as though she's always always pursuing, you know, information. And
she has no regard for nonsense, frothy nonsense. And this photograph was almost... I mean, the fact that Einstein was in the middle of it, two down the line from her, neither here nor there. I mean, I only recognised him and her.
Yeah.
I'm sure that everybody else is really renowned in that photo as well.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's an incredible period of time, sort of between the... You know, the turn of the 19th century, between a sort of 30-year period, they invented or came up with so many of the things we now use today. You know, there was flight, watches, electricity, phones. All of these things happened in such a small amount of time. It must have been incredibly exciting.
What a film. So you finished this 2 years ago. You had the premiere last night. How did it go?
It was yesterday. It was a lunchtime premiere, which is a bit strange, but... It went really well, you know. It was an international.
Did you get a
sense
in the auditorium?
Yeah, there was, you know, there's a lot of laughter, particularly from the women, at some of the lines of hers to these pompous men. It was great. It was a good atmosphere.
Yeah, there's some great rhetoric in there, isn't there? There's some classic rhetoric in
she's
there.
Yeah, brilliant.
All right, good. Well, Sam, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
It's great to break the duck together, to break our duck together. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Anything else we might be getting you in for that's already in the can?
I did Rebecca with Ben Wheatley for Netflix with Lily James and Armie Hammer coming out later.
Should we get you in for that? Do you want to stay here till then?
Yeah, okay. Don't mind.
Probably safest.
I'll wait it out here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, Sam Riley, Radioactive in cinemas. The story of Pierre and Marie Curie, or Marie and Pierre Curie, whichever way you'd like to look at it, in cinemas a week on Friday the 20th of March. It's a great, great film.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've heard from three guests already, but there's loads more still to come. Alistair McGowan chats his upcoming show at the Old Vic Theatre, The Piano Show. Noel Clarke and Ashley Walters give us the lowdown on Series 2 of Sky One's brilliant Bulletproof. And Claire Nelson tells us about her experience of surviving in the wilderness for 4 days and 3 nights after a 20-foot fall whilst hiking. All that and more, but first, Dapper Dave, who's next?
He's just as at home playing Debussy and Gershwin as he is being Dot Cotton and Roy Hodgson. His brand new UK tour, The Piano Show, starts in May. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man that always makes a good impression. It's the wonderful Alistair McGowan.
Good morning, Al.
Hello, Chris. Nice to be here. Morning, everyone.
How
morning.
Are
morning.
You?
I'm all right, thanks. Yes. If you're asking a serious question, I'm fine.
Good. We're all fine. So did you watch the Prime Minister on the Downing Street last night, 5 o'clock?
I did watch Prime Minister. And I have to say, you know, we may have different opinions about Boris in terms of what he stands for, what he's done, and what he may do in the future. But I do think the way he handled this, certainly last night, was exemplary.
It was very good, wasn't it?
Yeah,
does he feature in the show?
Yes, he does feature in the show. Yeah, okay. Briefly. Yeah,
so, I know about this because you've been on before talking about it. It's obviously working because you're doing it again.
Yeah, it's quite.
And you must be enjoying it because that's the deal.
I absolutely love it. It's the happiest thing I've ever done on stage, actually. I absolutely adore it. I mean, just to explain a little bit, I play sort of, I think, 13 pieces of piano music, classical piano music. They're all fairly short, 3 or 4 minutes, by the likes of Grieg and Debussy, as we heard, Chopin, Satie, Philip Glass, and a wonderful composer called Jan Tiersen. And he's very modern, wrote the music for Amelie and many modern films. But in between, I introduce the pieces, talk a little bit about the composer, and link it with some kind of crowbarred impressions and stand-up routines.
I was going to give you I was going to gift you the term, how do you weave them in? But crowbar is more
crowbar,
honest.
Crowbar, yeah. It's shameless. It's shameless. So it is, in a way, I sell it as being two shows in one, and it is. It's some stand-up, and then it's the music. But I'm not doing what the likes of Rainer Hirsch, Bill Bailey, Tim Minchin do. It's not funny songs. It's here's a bit of comedy, here's some stuff about the composer, and now here's the piece of music. I never thought it would work, but people seem to really like it.
Yeah, well, they do, those guys, hold different skill sets. So who gets in there and how might they get in there in between the music?
Well, probably the strangest one is the fact that George Gershwin, who's a wonderful composer, died very young, age 39 in 1938, I think. Gershwin loved to play tennis in his spare time, which is something I didn't know about.
Where's this going?
You just expect that composers just sit composing all day, but of course they have lives. Gershwin loved his tennis, so I say I love my tennis, and then before you know it, I'm doing my impression of Roger Federer and talking to you about Roger and how much I like him and how adept he is with his language. And all that sort of thing. And I've noticed recently with Federer that he's actually quite shy, and when he's talking in interviews, he often starts laughing uncontrollably. Like, he just can't quite believe that he's there. It's quite funny sometimes to see that, you know. So Gershwin and tennis. Grieg was a Norwegian composer.
I love these sort of juxtapositions.
I know, it's crazy. Grieg was a Norwegian composer, and I talk about Norway and their love of nature and the natural world.
Right, let's try and guess where we go. Oh, Dave Attenborough.
Correct.
Yes!
So David makes an appearance. Now, I didn't know this, but years ago, when I had my album released, which was 2017, me playing the piano album, still available to download.
But David Attenborough, we were working together for WWF, the wildlife people.
Right. And not the World Wrestling Federation.
Not the World Wrestling Federation, which he also enjoyed. But no, we met and talked, and I told him about this piano thing. He said, "Oh, it's incredible. Who do you play?" So I started to mention some of the composers, not thinking he'd know. He said, I play that
as well. I've been playing for 80 years. I love to. I play every day for half an hour.
So David Attenborough is a very keen pianist.
I tell you what, you've got him down, haven't you? You've got to be pleased with that.
Yes, I've had so little time to work on it too.
Is it the slack jaw that works there? Because when I'm watching you do
it's
it...
It's one of those things. Years ago, I used to do a routine about Michael Caine, which subsequently they've done on the trip as well. I'm not saying they stole it, but it was the same routine about how people's voices age. You know, you have the young Michael, and nowadays, of course, you have the older Michael when he's interviewed, and you have to acknowledge that people's voices age and they change. And similarly, David...
You're just who we need. Let's give Alison just a round of applause. Sorry, carry on. You're just who we need today.
I mean, 30 years ago when I started out... Yes, 30 years ago, Chris, when you used to come and watch me at the Meccano Club. 30 years ago, I mean, Attenborough was still everywhere, but he had that wonderful, "I'm here in the forest looking at the chimpanzees," blah, 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 that sort of voice.
But obviously now he's aged that much and you have to really take that on board. And some people would say, well, isn't that a bit rude? You know, because you're not mocking, you're just copying. But his voice obviously has aged as he has rather magnificently.
Yeah, and what's interesting about what you do now on stage when you're playing the piano is, you know, you can play the piano, but you sort of don't really understand it like a proper musician would, but you play impressively. So what you're doing, your gift, your skill, your superpower, is you can do impressions not only of people audibly, but you're now doing impressions of people playing the piano, aren't you? That's what you've become a piano impressionist.
Not really. No, I mean, it's very separate, as I say. The piano thing is, well, I suppose, yeah, it's like a vague impression of a professional pianist.
That's what I mean, but, because you can copy them, can't you? You copy what they do, but can you play from sheet music and things like that?
Oh, yeah, no, I have to play from music.
Oh, right.
You have to play from music, yeah. Right. But... I mean, people, I'm sure Damon would agree, if I always thought that to perform music in public, you had to have been to music college, done your degree, know everything about transposition, to be able to do, you know, to a perfect pitch, all the rest of it. And then I was doing my first show with the piano at Edinburgh, and I met someone, Ronnie Golden, who you probably remember from years ago too, who plays guitar. And actually, I shouldn't have mentioned his name. But I said to Ronnie, you know, I'm not a proper musician like you. And he said, well, I just play a few chords. He said, I don't understand the whole thing. I hope I'm not misquoting him here. But that was when the light went on. And I thought, you don't have to have been to music college to play in front of people. You know, if you've got half a talent, you play what you can play.
OK, the Piano Show Tour kicks off in Thornbury on 2nd of May until 9th, the 9th of October in Poole. Tickets available, alistairmcgowan.co.uk. We're looking at Gloucestershire and Oxfordshire and Coventry, Coventryshire and Hertfordshire and Londonshire and Liverpool and Durham and Yorkshire and North Yorkshire, and it goes on and on. So so we have a list of all dates there and how to get tickets there. Once again, let's give out a plug for the website address, alistairmcgowan.co.uk.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's topped the charts, sold out arenas, written best-selling books, and right now he's slap bang in the middle of his Trolls Not the Dolls stand-up tour. Please welcome a man that's here to tell us why a keyboard warrior shouldn't worry you. It's the comedic brilliance of David Baddiel.
Morning.
David, how are you?
I'm all right, actually. I'm doing well, yeah.
Where were you last night, and how was the coronavirus phenomenon among the crowd? How is it at the moment, right? Because you're there, you're
I'm
at the coalface, aren't you?
Yeah, well, last night I was in the Bex Theatre in Hayes.
Right.
And tonight I'm in Aylesbury Waterside Theatre. I was just in Scotland last week, and I wouldn't have been able to do any of those gigs. Is that right? Are they actually cancelling the gigs in Scotland?
From Monday. So public gatherings outside of 500 people or more. Yeah. 499, you're fine. Never get that. I've never understood that. Indoor gatherings of 100 people or less. But of course, everywhere you work is an indoor gathering of 100 people or more, if there's 100 people or more that work there. We are an indoor gathering of 3,500 people, but we're not a gig, so we're all right.
Right, I get it. Okay.
Sorry, was that comprehensive?
That was a bit longer than I expected.
Sorry.
Yeah, it was great.
Anyway,
but in Scotland, thank the Lord, all the gigs were over 500 people, and so they would have all been cancelled. Last night, it was... I tell you what it is. I come on and I sometimes say, it's lovely to see that you're all prepared to congregate in such large numbers at this stage in the apocalypse. And it gets a laugh, but it's a slightly frightened laugh, to be honest. And actually, I carried on talking about it because I just started ad-libbing about the fact that I think it's a bad time for burglars, right? Because basically everyone's staying in, which makes it very hard to burgle. And the other day, my burglar alarm went off and I went downstairs. I thought there might be an intruder, so I just started coughing loudly and I think he went away, right? And all of this went well, but with a sense of we're frightened, David, but it's nice to laugh, but we are frightened.
But laughing itself is a release of fear, isn't it? That's what laughter is. Come on, I know you've studied this, both of you, Alistair and David. So tell us about the phenomenon which is laughter.
No, well, it's a big question, but I completely agree. I completely agree that the whole point, really, of comedy at its best is to take, OK, here's a really dark and difficult thing, death being one of them, let's make fun of it. Because what else can you do with that stuff? You know, you can't really take it on board that we might all be about to die, so let's make fun of it.
We haven't talked about Trolls Not Dolls.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah,
well, we had talked about it a little bit.
I don't mind, as long as you don't mind.
I'll tell you one thing about it, which is weird. I'm going to say
Let's say this first of all. You had to put bums on seats. It's your tour.
Yes, it's my tour. It's happening now. It's about halfway through.
Okay, this is because you took the trolls on.
Yes.
On Twitter.
Yes,
you thought there's a show in this.
Yeah, well, the show begins with the fact that I was one of the people who thought, don't ignore the troll. No, that's a difficult double negative, isn't it? People say don't feed the trolls. I don't agree with that. Yeah. For me, not for everyone. Obviously, lots of people are going to get upset. They're going to get annoyed. For a comedian, they're hecklers. As far as I'm concerned, they're hecklers. So you put them down or you make fun of them.
You hold a mirror up. That's the best thing.
But you basically make comedy out of it. But the show isn't just about that. The show is about the way we live now, which is in this sort of completely mad way in which everyone overreacts to everything, in which everyone writes everything down. That's like a weird thing, I think, is that we live in a society we never used to write everything down, and certainly not write everything down in public. And when you do that, people act out who they are. They don't sort of just behave normally. And they get into fights in order to prove who they are and all the rest of it. But the show is also quite upbeat because it also says, here I am dealing with the trolls and here's some bloke who's decided to run with the comedy. And next thing you know, it's like conducting an enormous comedy orchestra because there's lots of people joining in with this, which is actually really a brilliant way of dealing with trolls. So the show is very much about the yin and yang of social media. But what I was going to say, Chris, is it is weird being on a show, plugging a tour that might be cancelled.
No, I know, I was going to say. How about this for optimism? He's announced some new dates.
I know. I'm the only person in the world to be announcing new dates at this particular moment.
Okay,
yes, you can come and see me in a sealed dome somewhere in the Arctic.
Thursday, 16th of July, through to Sunday, the 19th of July, the Trolls Not Dolls tour follows both critically acclaimed My Family Not the Sea, I'm 2016, and Fame Not the Musical. The trolls, the internet trolls, Twitter trolls. You can't be trolled on Instagram, can you? Because it doesn't work like that. That's one of the.
Instagram is a nicer platform.
Right. So the trolls, you give them what for, and then you turn their trolling into a show, and so you start to make money out of their ignorance, stupidity, anger, self-loathing, perhaps?
To some extent. I mean, they're hecklers. That's what they are. You know, they're people shouting at you in the dark.
Well, they're not, are they?
They are hecklers. I mean, it's just a different type of heckler.
But at least hecklers, they know they're in the same room as you. They can be seen by other people. Yeah. It's even more cowardly, isn't it?
Is it? In a way, it is. I mean, but basically, the way that I always dealt with trolls was to, screenshot what they'd said, however abusive it was, and then say something funny above it. And then my followers, who are essentially the rest of the audience, would like that, which is sort of them laughing at me dealing with a heckler. So if it feels to be like a virtual copy of the same kind of thing. One of the things about me is I'm a very unangry person, I think. I'm a very direct person. My wife said to me the other day, have you ever thought about saying the second thing that comes into your head? But it's good advice for me, because sometimes with hecklers, I just step away from them, right? Do you know, by the way, everyone knows this, don't they, that my wife is Morwenna Banks, who is the mummy pig and Peppa Pig.
I was passerby the other day. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, she is. It's a complicated for a Jewish bloke, to be honest with you, but I deal with it. But that's what I do, is that I deal with them in a way that involves building and saying yes to what they say. Yeah, that's essentially just a comic thing, is that they've abused you, but instead of getting upset, build on it, right? So for example, this is a very simple thing you could do with trolls, is obviously they can't spell. So someone shouted at me something about privileged celebs, you have no idea of real life. And he spelt it with an A. So I said, it's true, I'm so privileged, I know how to spell it, right? And then next thing I know, someone is saying to me, calling out spelling mistakes on Twitter is so 2015. I said, you spelt so wrong. And it's just using what they give you. And in a way, that disarms them.
That's like martial arts, though, isn't it?
Essentially, yeah.
It's the martial arts of comedy.
Yeah, well, Ricky Gervais once said that watching my Twitter feed was like watching quite a bad kung fu movie, where essentially it's me dealing with a lot of idiots continually with the moves that I have. Yeah.
Right, so, Alistair, you've never social media'd. Well, you did for a millisecond and then thought better of it.
Yeah, I can't remember what I'd just done, and I thought, I wonder what people think. There's this new thing. This is like 10 years ago. I remember I just moved into my new house, so there I was looking at this thing. I thought, oh, somebody liked whatever it was I'd just done. And I thought, great, second one, they liked it as well. I thought, great, 2-0. Then somebody didn't like it. I thought, and somebody else didn't like it. I was 2-2. And I thought, this is getting negative now. What do I do? And I thought, well, you've got to end on a positive. You've got to win. You've got to score the winning goal before you go to sleep. So I went and it was 3-2 down. So then I went 4-2 down, and I thought, I could be here all night. Yeah. And that was enough. Those 5 minutes.
It's going to get worse.
And I thought, that's it. And I've never,
ever
looked at
it ever since.
It can
feel like that, but it can also feel... I wanted to stress this, because I think that because it's a show about trolls, people do think, oh, it's all negative. Like, there is incredible stuff on social media. You can see people joining in. It can be about the communication it's supposed to be about. I mean, I find this sometimes with like very small observational things that I think, well, I'll just put this on social media, it probably won't relate to anyone. So I remember I was in a posh hotel eating on my own, and I said this, and I've in an effort to be grown up, I've ordered fish. I'm already in advance disappointed, right? And that got loads of people commenting. One bloke called Michael Wargan, I remember his name, he said, I once had fish in a posh restaurant. It was Brill. And I remember thinking, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. That's proper joining in. And that's when it becomes like, actually, out there are a lot of nice people. Yeah. They're just not quite as loud as the people shouting at you and trying to make it a battle.
Trolls Not the Doors with David Baddiel, davidbaddiel.com. Still adding more dates.
Still adding more dates. People are coming. Can I just say something?
Yes.
Tickets are still selling.
Of course
I am told that tickets are still selling. I don't know if it's people who haven't listened to the news, but tickets are still selling for my show.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Undercover cops, £1 million drops and infiltrating crime empires are all in a day's work for our next guest. That's right, the Sky original Bulletproof is back on Sky One for Series 2 later this month, and here to tell us all about it are this generation Starsky and Hutch. It's the wonderful Noel Clarke and Ashley Walters.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yay. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thanks for coming here. Now, we are late. We are ashamed to be late to the Bulletproof party, because this is Series 2.
It is indeed, yeah.
OK, we missed Series 1, missed out on Series 1, but the rest of the world didn't. So tell us about how it fared on the Sky, tick sheet or whatever they'd say. You know, if you were employees, your appraisals went pretty well, I would imagine.
Yeah, we were employees of that month that it came out.
Every month?
Yeah, we won everything.
Did you win some awards?
No, we didn't win awards.
We didn't win any awards, but in terms of viewers, we were, I think the highest on Catch Up, the highest live audience, and also, in terms of when they ask people about why they subscribe to Sky, we were like top of that as well. So.
Yeah, it's what is the call to action, isn't it? The intention to buy Sky, and you were like number one on
that.
Yeah,
we were well up there. Yeah.
Pretty cool. So they must like you then.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we think so.
All right, so for people who don't know, tell everybody, Noel Clarke and Ashley Walters, who you play and what you get up to, both of you.
All right, so I play Officer Ronald Pike. Noel plays a guy called Aaron Bishop. We're two NCA cops.
What does NCA mean for people who don't know?
National Crime Agency. Yeah. So basically we're a mixture of like all different police departments in one sort of building.
Bit of Sweeney, bit of cyber, a bit of everything.
Yeah, deals
with like massive organised crime generally.
All right. Okay, and the opening sequence of the first episode of the second series, I mean, it was Bond-esque. Can you actually drive that well?
Yeah, I can actually.
Because I saw some of the driving sequences. I thought, I think he's actually doing that.
Yeah, I do a lot of my own driving. I'd say at least like 90% of it. In South Africa, where we just come back from, actually, where we were shooting a special, I did all of it. But so I do a lot of the driving. I enjoy it.
All right, so you're dealing with drugs, you're dealing with knife crime, you're dealing with everything that's going on at the moment. So many things about it that work, because it's relevant, it's cool, it's dealing with things that we need to talk about now that aren't talked about as much as perhaps they should be. It's funny. It's dealing with domestic issues at home. It's dealing with... Because the sort of main arc of episode one is the fact that there are organised gangs selling drugs on the streets. But then certain sort of goings on quieten down, and they quieten down for a reason, and this is a thing, isn't it? So they stop selling one drug so they can start selling another drug.
Yeah, well, crime families or organised crime will kind of strangle the market on one thing and intimidate people to not sell it. And when everyone's kind of like, where's my fix? They introduce something new or their version of something new.
So that's when it gets through. Well, it's dangerous anyway, but it gets even more dangerous then because the drugs aren't as pure as
they're not as pure, they're more dangerous, they could be more potent, and that's when it gets to the organised crime level where people like us have to get involved and be the good guys and stop it.
Right. I love your boss. What's her name?
Tanner.
I didn't realise, I thought, if I had to bet, I wouldn't have thought she'd have got as potty mouth. She does.
I know.
She's amazing. She's like your M, isn't she?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. She's so great. Cool. She's great.
Except she says a few beeps here and there and put us in our place.
You got the M-bombs and the F-bombs. And then there are two new recruits, two good badass girls.
Yes.
Who would tell us about those?
So you've got Lucy Shorthouse and Olivia Chenery, and they play Paige and Scarlett, who's nicknamed Scooch.
Right, and anyways, they're coming to get you, your crown, aren't they?
Well, potentially. Yeah, I mean, who knows? It could be them after, you know, you never know. They're two really good girls that come in and just kick butt and really add a lot to the team and just make it whole.
Tell us, how come you two ended up in South Africa? This is a first. So we're just talking to the boys off the air, and it's a series threes in the bag because you're like the most popular thing on Sky. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, sort of, but we're sort of... We're filming sort of series 2.5. We're like, we've never heard... Been doing this quite a while now, boys. Never really heard of series 2.5. 2.5. Please explain further.
Well, you go on.
So they were really happy with season one and really happy with two in the bag. And we've both got other commitments, and they didn't want to wait too long for three. So they said, while we're waiting, we can fit in a sort of 2.5, which are like some specials that we can put out later in the year. Good. But we want it to be special. So not just, we don't want to do a short season in London. So what can we do? And we said, well, we got this idea where our characters are just on holiday. So they're on holiday, minding their own business on a beach somewhere.
Love it.
Something kicks off.
Midsummer Murders.
With a stunt here and there. And something kicks off. And being the cops that we are, we're compelled to help. And we get drawn into this thing. And what you get is an amazing 3-episode thrilling thing with us out of our depth, you know, in a different country. And that's what we literally came back from South Africa on Friday.
Good for you. Right. Now tell us the irony of America and what you have to do to the Eps that go in America. This is crazy. Is it funny or is it, I don't know, it's either really ironic or absolutely transparent.
Both, I think. So it does all right in America. It's doing well in America and it's on the CW. But for the American versions, we have to re-record all the language that has any sort of swearing in it.
Yeah.
And take that all out. So we suddenly go, oh my gosh, what the fudge is happening? Do you know what I mean? Or things like that.
Cauliflower, we use cauliflower. What the cauliflower are you doing over there? Throwing a few vegetables, they love that.
So there's one scene where I say, I take the Lord's name in vain, but we've changed it to me going, oh, cheese on toast. Because it matches with the lips.
Oh my God, parents. You're an all-round inspiration to both of you.
Thank you, Noel
Clark and Ashley Walters, Bulletproof Series 2. We are new to the party, but we loved it last night. All episodes available to watch on Sky One from next Friday, 20th of March. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Deb and Dave, do your stuff, please, if you don't mind.
Our next guest dreamt of escaping the grind of busy city life with a hike through the wilderness, but her dream soon went south. The new book, Things I Learned from Falling, is out now, and here to tell her remarkable story of sunburn, selfies, and surviving wild coyotes is the brilliant Claire Nelson.
Good morning, Claire.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. All right, so can you give us a 60-second précis for people listening as to what we're about to talk about, please?
Sure. So in 2018, I left London. I was feeling burnt out and I decided I would move to North America and explore the wilds and wilderness and go hiking and connect with the outdoors. I was on a hike and do you want me to... So I was on a hike, a day hike, where I lost my footing on some boulders and fell 25 feet. And I shattered my pelvis and I couldn't move. So I was lying on my back and I didn't have phone signal. I hadn't told anyone where I was going. And I was out there for 4 days.
And so you walk along the trail, or you're off the beaten path, as it were, and then you slip on a boulder. Can you take us through the... Do you remember the moment that you lost your footing?
Oh, yeah. I I'm off the trail without realizing it. I come to this really high stack of boulders. They're everywhere in the desert. I realize I'm going to have to climb over it to continue the path that I was on. And it was when I was at the top, I'm trying to sort of find my footing. And then I just start to slide. So I've lost my footing. And it all happened in slow motion. And yet it was only a few seconds. And I didn't know where I was going to land. I just remember my brain going, this is, you're going to get hurt. This is going to hurt. And then just no. And then off the edge.
So you crash to the ground, you stop eventually. Are you sliding or are you tumbling or
I
what?
I slid for the first 10 feet and then dropped for the remaining 15 feet.
Okay.
And then when I hit the ground, I heard this crack and my pelvis shattered. And I remember thinking at the time the word shattered and you know, when you've shattered your pelvis, like there's no question about it. And your hinge is effectively broken, so I couldn't sit up and I couldn't get off my elbows, so I'm flat on my back and I couldn't move anything below the waist.
Now, as bad as that is, and it is awful, it's not the end of the world. I wouldn't imagine you think it's the end of the world. It's potentially the end of my life. You wouldn't think that, would you? You think, okay, I'm in trouble here. What an idiot. Ow, my goodness me, that hurts beyond belief. Ow, 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 ow. But then when did it begin to become a little more patently evident that things could be life-threatening?
Well, first of all, that was exactly my mindset. Like, you've just nailed the whole process of this is really painful, but I can move my toes. I know I'm not paralysed. I just need to find a way to get out of here.
We're only 2.5 hours into the story. Well, you've got 3.5 days to go. How do you want to walk us through that? Do it in any way you'd like.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a weird process of going through all these emotions of being angry at myself and being, you know, really sad and then being in denial about what was happening and then through to acceptance. But the first night that I was out there was terrifying because realizing that I've fallen and had an accident is one thing. But then to be out there at night, like I'd never and ever anticipated I'd be lying out in the desert injured at night. Like, that was a terrifying prospect. I knew it was rattlesnake season as well, and I'm on at ground level. So the whole first night I was just had all these, I kept imagining I was seeing snakes coming out of the crevices in the rocks, so I didn't really sleep very much. And then by the time the second morning rolled around, I was like, oh, thank God, well, that's over. At least I've made it through. Now someone's going to come by and find me and I'll get out of here.
So it was the renewed optimism the next day.
Absolutely.
With the sunrise came more hope.
Exactly.
Simple as that. It's funny what night and day does to us, isn't
it? Honestly, something about fear in the dark has just escalated.
Always.
Yeah.
Right, the night terrors, regardless whether you're in your bed or, you know, wherever you were. Nightfall, day three, Claire. Tell us about that. Tell us about how you were. I hear about your face was sunken, you were dehydrated. Mm-hmm. It was all getting very, very, very serious and very desperate by that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Last night, that was the moment where I was really... that afternoon, I'd realised that I might die there. But that night, I think I accepted it for the first time.
All right. Okay, so day four... happens. You're still around. How did you? Were you expecting to wake up? How did you feel when you woke up? What hurt? What didn't hurt? Were you numb to everything?
Everything hurt. I mean, if you imagine when you sit down for too long and you sort of, you know, your bum falls asleep and you get kind of really that sore feeling. I had that through my entire body because I hadn't been able to roll over or move or anything. Everything hurt. I felt so weak, but I was like, okay, I've survived another night. Can I do another 24 hours? I don't know. And I started to record this in another message, and then my camera died. And I think that was another piece of kind of hope that I was clinging to that just kind of died as well. And I thought, well, I've got nothing left now. It's just me out here. So I started to kind of drift in and out of consciousness. I was too tired at this point to hold my sunshade up, so I just sort of draped it over the top of me and just lay there in the heat.
So how come you're here?
Well, during my sort of unconscious revelry, I heard a voice come out of the sky, which kind of woke me back up, and it was a search helicopter. And then I heard them say, "We're looking for a missing hiker." And I knew I had to get their attention somehow, but I couldn't believe that this was happening because I just accepted that it wasn't going to happen. So, and the funny thing was, I wasn't actually sure it was me they were looking for. I just thought, they're looking for a hiker. Well, this is great. Maybe they'll find me as well.
I've lost two. Oh,
exactly.
No, there's more than one of us.
It literally went through my mind. And so they came over, but I couldn't see them. I could just hear them. And then the sound kind of got quieter and quieter, and then it disappeared and it was gone. And I thought, please come back, please come back. And then I heard it came back again a little while later. So I'm screaming, of course, and I'm waving this flag, but they can't see me down there. And so sure enough, I heard them say my name this time. And this was like, oh, my God. But then, again, it got quieter, and then they left. And I thought, they're not even looking here. They're going to be looking on the trail, I guess. So I then kind of reinforced my sunshade, my flag, put my T-shirt on it, put my hat on it. I made it as big as I could, just in case they came back. And then they did. They came back. And this time I waved that thing as high up as I could reach. It was so painful and as hard as I could wave it. And the guys, they said they saw a movement. They thought it was like a plastic bag blowing around in the valley below. But something made the deputy Manny, made him get his binoculars out and go, I just want to go back and check. So they went back and he checked and he said, that's the hiker. Just makes like my neck, like the hairs on the back of my neck stand up when I think of it, because it could so easily have not happened that way.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.